Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Jimmy Breslin knows New York, and he knows the mob. Last week, the mob mafia was huge in the headlines with a giant bust of the Gambino mob family bosses, more than 80 mobsters arrested in the U.S. and Sicily. Breslin's new book, The Good Rat, takes us into a lifetime of reporting on the mob and much more by a New York legend. Joining me from New York is Jimmy Breslin, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist who's been reporting on New York since 1963. He's best-selling author of many books, including The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight, Can't Anybody Here Play This Game, The Short Sweet Dream of Eduardo Gutierrez. His new book is The Good Rat, a true story. The New York Times calls it Jimmy Breslin at his best. And that's pretty darn good. Jimmy, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Fun.
The mob, again, now, why? Yeah. Why do you want it?
I spoke to the publisher when the there were two detectives named Eppolito and Caracappa were in the headlines. They were arrested for working with the mafia to get people killed. And a lot of people got killed. And they were making a big trial out of it, and it was going to be a huge thing, exciting. Well, I thought I would just write about it, so I contracted with HarperCollins Echo yeah. Press Division to write a book. And I went to the case the first day in the Eastern District Court, federal court in Brooklyn, and they were in the hall. They were out on bail awaiting their trial, which was to start in a few minutes. And I talked to them for a while, for those few minutes. And I hated them.
These two dirty cops, the mafia cops.
Why? Because I didn't like them.
But you're not a cop hater. What about these guys?
I have my own personal emotions, and they didn't include liking these two.
Okay.
So I went into the courtroom, and I said, what I'll do at lunchtime, I'll go out and I'll call the publisher and say, I can't give 6 months of my life or more writing about these two people. I'm not going to do it.
They were too dull, too drab.
Drab, vulnerable, very nothing. I didn't see a plus there. Now the door opened, and in walked Burton Kaplan as the first prosecution witness. Well, I don't know. He had a receding hair. He had a business suit on, shirt and tie, and he sat down. And they said to him, are you in the mafia? He says, no, I can't be. I'm Jewish. And they asked him, I'm starting to get stunned. They asked him, have you committed any crimes? And he said, yes. What were the crimes? Murder, manslaughter, arson, assault, hijacking.
Yeah.
He went through everything but killing babies.
Yeah.
I said, listen to this guy. And that was the start. And then they said, have you committed any crimes while you're in prison? He was in prison half his life.
Yeah.
Allenwood, he was in Allenwood Correctional Facility in Pennsylvania, and he said, yes, I was assaulted. So I got a friend of mine to send me $1,000 in the mail, and I gave it to a Mexican, and he assaulted the guy back. And he assaulted him pretty good, he said. And then he sat and he looked around the courtroom, and he said, that's what jail is like, you know. And I said, look at this. Absolutely the best witness I've ever seen. He then went on. He told about murder so with such extraordinary recall that he stunned the courtroom. The judge said Jack Weinstein, famous New York judge, had never heard anybody like him. Neither had I. And I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking, Dostoevsky, that's all he is. He came right here from Dostoevsky. Now, at lunch, I went across the street to get a cup of coffee and a think, and Bettina Schein, a lovely young woman who worked with the defense attorney, Bruce Cutler, she's a criminal lawyer, came up to me and said, what do you think of the witness? And before I could say anything, she said, Raskolnikov.
And we're right in the middle of Dostoevsky and Crime and Punishment and all the rest.
So I went back and had the coffee, and I said, that's what he is. He's of that magnitude as a witness. I'm going to do a book based on him. Forget these two detectives.
Why the good rat? I mean, he brought the testimony that put the dirty cops away, but still, you just laid out his rap sheet, everything he's been involved in. Dostoevsky wrestled with, and now you have too. Same thing. So he's a rat, makes him good?
Because he traffics in murder, and that is the main event.
That makes him good?
No, but I mean, he's not a hedge fund operator. I never said that Kaplan was to be worshipped. Kaplan was to be looked at and observed just what he is, that there are no limits. He just goes.
It's an amazing story.
That's exactly why I wrote it. It's an amazing story, and people read it and are stunned by it. They talk about it.
I'm not extolling
him.
Yeah. I wish you'd read a little bit for us, Jimmy. Jimmy Breslin, page 11 there in your new book, The Good Rat. You've got to you introduce us to Bert Kaplan, where he's from, a little bit of what he's about.
10, 11. Now, wait till I get to the page.
Sure.
Fast.
Page 11.
Yep, here. We get there.
Good.
Okay. This is Bert Kaplan. He does not come out of a hovel whose tough guys, as they're called, are raised there and wait a minute, the light here. Let me get the light straight. So, they got it dim here.
Here we go. Yeah.
He does not come out of a hovel whose tough guys, as they're called, are
I got it. Three and four in one bed in a
I'll
wretched
raise three
family.
And four in one bed in a wretched family, and dinner is anything stolen.
Yeah.
He was raised on Vanderbilt Avenue in Brooklyn, a street of neat two- and three-story attached brick houses with stores on the first floor. Everybody had a job. Kaplan's father was an electrician. The family had an appliance store and a liquor store. He went to one of the best public high schools in North America, Brooklyn Technical, and in what often seemed to be the way of his life, he stayed there for a year and a half and was so close to legitimate success when he decided to quit. Of Brooklyn Tech, he laments, "I wish I stood there." Instead, he was a great merchant, too great, and after he sold everything that did belong to him, he would change that. He would sell things that didn't belong to him, as those were on.
No thrills and constant legitimacy. He loved thievery.
This reduced him. This what?
You got him moving up from Vanderbilt Avenue at age 39 to Lewisburg Penitentiary.
This is sent him. He went to Lewisburg, Pennsylvania.
And here he was.
At age 39, he went to Lewisburg Penitentiary on his first sentence, 5 years federal. Today, at 72, he still owes 18 years on the penitentiary on drug charges. And he's in court to talk his way out of them.
Jimmy Breslin there from The Good Rat, talking about Burton Kaplan, who stood
stumbling
up
in a light. All right.
We'll take it any way all you right. give it.
I'm not blind.
Okay. We buy it.
Why is it that I'm here on a legitimate, lovely endeavor reading something for a radio station if I am doing this in a bar where you can't see anything, smoke? Dimness. Without looking, I could do it.
You know, Jimmy, I have to say, I think if I read right here, you're 77 now, and the writing in here is so taut and so clear, and so. I mean, this is beautiful. You got poetry going on in here. I found myself wondering, at 77, how do you still do that? When you sit down to put that tension, that tautness, that kind of delivering in every line in a book, where do you muster that from?
What am I going to do, go out and get a job?
I guess this is it.
Labor. I was born on 101st Avenue in Ozone Park, Queens, New York City. That's the block John Gotti comes from up the street. Next door was Al Hansen, my friend, and his father had a crane. And he parked the crane in the side yard of the house between our houses, and then he went out to work every day with the crane. But each morning, the sun would rise and come through the boom on the crane, and it would put the shadow of manual labor on my face and on Al Hansen's face. Both of us were cured instantly of going for jobs.
Get Jimmy Breslin to the keyboard and get in there quick.
Yep, and Al Hansen went and became a very well-known artist. Yeah. He's got a big exhibit still in Cologne, Germany.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with New Yorker extraordinaire Jimmy Breslin about the Big Apple, the world, and stories of the New York mob. His new book, and it's a really riveting read, is The Good Rat, a true story. New York Times says this is Breslin at his best, and it reads that way. Jimmy Breslin, a lot of people want to talk with you. Albert in Worcester, Mass.
Good.
You're on with Jimmy.
Thank you, Tom and Jimmy. I'm wondering if Jimmy feels that the dirty cops that were informed on by the fellows writing about were worse psychopaths. Would he feel safer with the good rat, the guy who informed them, that the good rat would not do anything to Jimmy if there was no halfway sane reason? I'm an adult autistic, so I'm interested, who's crazier? Did the good rat redeem himself as a human being?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Don't ask him to leave his trade. No, he was a thief, a drug peddler, and he was an associate in murders. He's not going to change.
But so were the cops' associates in murders. Who would you put life in whose hands?
I don't like the cops at all. I don't think this book makes anybody look particularly good. It just observes things as they are.
But still, Albert's question is an interesting one. If you had to decide, you're a judge of human character,
no,
you've got
I'm
to put your life
decide.
In somebody's hands, would you put bet it on the cops or on your
rat? No, I'll bet
rat.
On Breslin ahead of both of them. No.
And watch what out to both of them.
What are you nuts? I'm supposed to entrust my life to two detectives that were shooting people for money, or a guy Kaplan that doesn't know he knows right from wrong, and he chooses wrong.
What do you make of the guy who just came out last week, the big, trucking guy who was behind all the arrests that came down in the Gambino family last week? Is this another good rat in the headlines, Jimmy?
Yeah, I don't know what he did. I know what Kaplan did. You know, we know from testimony. I don't know what the guy did. The New York case is what? They arrested 60 people?
Something like that. He wore a wire in prison
They're in their 60s. They're in jail. I'm not discounting it. But I don't see anything there that moves me that I would want to write a book yet.
Does the mob still live? Does it still matter? That sounds like a lot of arrests. It suggests a lot of arrests.
A lot of arrests. It's cleaning the place out, you say. Ozone Park, where they come from, has lost its zip code. They're beginning to wail. Well, as long as there's a way of life where you can get money and not have to work, which is the big thing, or finish school. You don't even have to finish high school. You don't have to sit in those classrooms. Go out, run errands for the guys on the street corner, and then go out and make some money. Do it. You're in the mob. It'll never die as long as that's out there.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Michael. Michael, you're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You usually have great guests. Today you got the greatest. I was born 60-some-odd years ago in Kew Gardens Hospital on the corner of Queens Boulevard and Union Turnpike.
That's yes. Breslin territory.
Yeah, yes. I used to see Jimmy and Dick Schaap at the Pastrami King down Queens Boulevard at Stratton's at 71st and Continental. And I have to tell you, this is the greatest writer in both reportage and fiction that I've read in my 60 years. He has books like Table Money, Forsaking All Others. It tells the story of New York, the story of the people who lived there and died there, and he tells it all with an honesty and an emotion and a pathos that is unparalleled by any writer that I've read in all my years. And I couldn't let this opportunity go by to tell everybody to run out and get everything they can by Mr. Breslin.
Jimmy, you got a stone-cold fan from the old neighborhood there.
Yeah, and why don't I leave the show right now when I'm ahead like
it's
this?
Not going to get
wonderful.
Better?
Wonderful. Now, why should I wait for it?
How is the old neighborhood these days? Michael says he grew up around the corner from you. When you go back, do you recognize it? Is it?
Oh yeah, come on. That's by now. That's a very rich neighborhood.
Well, that's
you
different.
You go 2 blocks up. There's a place, Forest Hills Gardens. I mean, there's no place in America as rich. So it's terrific. No, it's very good.
But do you still like? I mean, you're writing in here.
The courthouse is there, and the street's always loaded with people going in for arraignments, families going to bail somebody out. It's very good for that.
It's good for that. I don't know about the rich part. You write in here, I can barely handle legitimate people, you write, Jimmy Breslin. Yeah, they all proclaim immaculate honesty, but each day they commit the most serious of all felonies, being a bore. To whom do you care to listen? Warren Buffett, you write, the second richest and single most boring person on earth, or Bert Kaplan, your good rat, out of Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
No contest. You want to write a book about Warren Buffett? You want to read a book about Warren Buffett? Or do you want to read about Bert Kaplan, who says I can't be in the mafia, I'm Jewish?
Is that true, by the way? I don't know mafia lore. Is it true that...
Who knows what they talk of lore? I know that John Gotti sat at a table at Aqueduct Racetrack, and he used to give his wife $100 a race, and she'd go and bet. So she'd go and bet $5 and put the $95 in her purse. And that went on for 6 or 7 races. She was Russian. And then once they got a look at her purse that was on the table in the dining room, and it was stuffed with money. And he says, look at this Jew. He's yelling out, Gotti. She's got all the money. They are merchant. That's all. No, I know. She was there that once. I think they had an argument when they were made people for their Gambino crime family, and they didn't want to make Junior Gotti because they said he's half Jewish, his mother's Jewish. And she let out a scream that's only at the racetrack. What do you think I'm dealing with? Fight better Kappas here or something?
I wouldn't say so. You're dealing with Bert Kaplan, and he makes bones about whose daughter is a judge, as I read you here.
It makes me stutter. In the midst of all this, we find out he has a daughter who's a New York State Supreme Court just sitting in Manhattan. And we checked how she got there. She went into a Upstate Women's Bar Association to a Nassau County, I think, a Women's Bar Association. She was very close to a Burstein, who was the surrogate out there, I guess. She had a big legal job, big woman.
Yeah, and here's Dad standing
in. And she became a judge. Yeah. And I go to the courtroom. I want to talk to her. I couldn't believe it. And two big court officers stand in the way. I can hardly see her. She didn't want to talk to me. She didn't want anything.
Well, I wonder why not.
She's not a dope.
No,
she's not a dope. She wasn't going to get caught with this business.
Well, you've got the testimony from her dad here, and he's talking about his interstate shipping activities.
Yes.
I went to prison for flash cubes, I guess stolen and sold, for some pants, a shipment of hair dryers stolen and sold. And then we get on down into the heroin charges. I love this. He said, in 1993, I was arrested in a conspiracy to sell stolen Peruvian passports. But he says, come on, we were selling them in Hong Kong, and it's legal there. Whoa.
That's right.
And then marijuana, dad's got a rap sheet as long as his arm. Give us a little Jimmy Breslin literature lesson here. Dostoevsky and, your Raskolnikov, it's all about the guy who wonders if he can make something good out of bad. Does Bert Kaplan wrestle with that, though? Did he care?
Well, good. He made his daughter a judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to, he doesn't tell people about it. God knows what he did behind it to get her there, but she's there. You don't become a Supreme Court Justice of New York unless somebody does something for you.
Let's go to Paul in Buffalo, New York. Paul, you're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I haven't read Mr. Breslin's book, but I've always had an issue with the mafia being used as a background and a context to tell a story, and it seems like it inevitably tells that story in a very sensational. It might be true. I'm not discounting the fact that it's true, but it always seems sensational and sexy, and we turn these guys into celebrities, and they have really cool nicknames. But isn't it ultimately, you know, maybe the message doesn't get across about the real effect that they have on our society, both in terms of as a taxpayer, what I have to pay to constantly be confronting the mafia, and as a consumer, the amount of, I mean, they affect, from what I understand, even right down to a guy like Will Perdue, the chicken that I buy is somewhat impacted, the cost of that chicken is somewhat impacted by the mafia. And, you know, that's always been an issue that I've had. You know, I'll end up as a movie, and Pacino will play some grand character, and people will start...
You blame it on Jimmy Breslin? You think he's made him into heroes, Paul?
No, I'm not blaming him. I haven't read his book, so this is not specifically to Mr. Breslin. But doesn't it always seem like, can you imagine telling these stories about Islamic fundamentalists and turning them into heroes and really cool guys and giving a guy like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed a really fun nickname like the Shaker?
I think that you know, you're
Jimmy,
so far off. I mean, he's so far off. Don't go that far off. Stay to the point. You don't like them. You think they're glorified. I thought the Godfather glorified them, yes. I don't think the gang that couldn't shoot straight glorified them. I mean, I'm in the dopes. What did they do? You mentioned Purdue with the chickens. Yeah, typical. All these businessmen that get involved with them get involved because they go looking for them. They want the muscle. They want the help. They want the edge. And that's how they come into the mafia. The mafia isn't smart enough to know how to find where Purdue's office is. But he knows where to find them. No, I don't see where it's... And you're telling me, in other words, let's ignore them. Well, there's one word that runs through America at all times, E for excitement. They're exciting and everybody else is dull. I said Buffett. I think a good anti-crime measure in New York, in every place, would be to get all the hedge fund operators, these smooth-faced white guys, and put them against the wall, get the mafia to shoot them all, and then we arrest the mafia for murder, and there's no crime. No crime left for
Jimmy,
a while.
You're going for some pretty extreme solutions here. That's what puts the guilt edge
I'll
on your city.
I'll get a lot of applause. The hedge fund guys will get me a lot of applause.
Why? They're that bad?
Yeah, I think so.
Why? Why?
Because they're robbing people, and they're making millions. At a time when we have trouble, we have people can't sleep at night. They don't have a place to stay.
They made your city rich.
What part of the city? Ah, you just brought it up. What part of the city they make rich? The top 1%? The top 2%? That's all? It's a rich man's game. Rich. You're supposed to extol the rich. Be nice to them. Smile. The rich can make you laugh. All they have to do is say some corny joke and everybody laughs. No.
Jimmy Breslin's not having any part of that. Watch out, hedge fund guys. Don't get into a Breslin novel.
Up against the wall.
Oh, jeez. Let's get a call.
The Cubans say, Parador.
Okay. Let's keep the safeties on. Jim in Mystic, yes. Connecticut, you're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I asked a friend of mine this question last week, and he couldn't give me an answer, even though he knows some of the bad guys in Rhode Island. Why hasn't Sammy the Bull been punished, either by his past partners or the government?
You guys are in the know. I'm not. Why isn't Sammy the Bull in jail? Who's Sammy the Bull and
Ravano? He's in jail now.
Well, okay, well, that settles that.
And he's going to be there forever, I assume.
He makes an appearance in your book. What's up with Sammy the Bull? Give us his background, Jimmy.
The appearance was that he was a murderer with the chauffeur for John Gotti. They drove around shooting people. He did the shooting. Sammy Gravano, enters the book just so I was showing him appearing in court in Jersey, of all places, where they were dragging him in on a case, a murder case. He'd been sentenced in New York. He's sentenced in Phoenix. He's in jail forever.
Oh, that sounds like Sammy the Bull is under lock and key, but you would keep better track of it than I would. Let's get a call from Daniel in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Hi there, Jimmy. I used to read you when I was a teenager in Queens and saw you speak at BU 30-something years ago.
I wasn't around then.
I think you're,
go
your
ahead.
Brother might have
been. I always have to say I remember you when. Go ahead.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed with the public fascination with The Sopranos because I think it gives them the same sort of middle-class neurotic temperament as more ordinary people. I know the screenwriter for that show bases a lot on his own family, which certainly aren't mafia. And it makes them into kind of ordinary, sympathetic people. And then there's this whole fascination where America loves criminals. I guess because they take George Bush, you know, for 8 years, they say, well, criminality is attractive somehow. I don't know, but...
But you just heard Jimmy say it's E for excitement. That's what he's looking for. That's what Americans are looking for. That's what he's going to give him. What, are you taking issue with that, Daniel?
Well, it is, yeah. It is colorful. It is exciting. But what do you think of projections that the mafia are, you know, ordinary neurotic people who are just like the rest of us?
Tony Soprano walking down this his driveway in his morning bathrobe to get the paper. Looks too middle class to you.
And the problems, too. I mean, obviously, he brings to his psychologist a lot of problems that the rest of us don't, but it seems like it makes them just your everyday neurotic American.
Jimmy Breslin, the mob been prettied up by The Sopranos?
I am not an expert on The Sopranos. It was on a night when I was always writing columns for newspapers, and my newspaper, I never saw it that much. What's the matter? They live in houses. They live in houses in Ozone Park in Queens. And everything's fine until they have to go out and shoot somebody. I don't see. I'm not an expert on the Sopranos, but its effect. I think its effect is entertainment. I mean, where has it had an effect on daily life? Certainly, the way you can really tell is the politics. I don't know if anybody in the state legislature, even, who's connected to gangsters anymore. No congressman. They take some money from them, maybe, but that's about it. They don't do very much for them.
Sounds like you almost regret that.
No, I don't. Well, I don't regret anything. I'm just observing. They're not there. I hate boring life, you know. It's no good.
Is it getting more boring?
Well, it could get very boring. If the preponderance of interest in business, which is the most boring thing on earth, never mind that. Now, the sports pages have this, all the pages have this Roger Clemens along with...
We're going to ask you about that. We're going to ask you. We know you're looking at Branch Rickey lately. Jimmy Breslin, stand by. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking with New Yorker extraordinaire Jimmy Breslin about the Big Apple, the world, politics, baseball, stories of the New York mob. His new book is The Good Rat, A True Story. Jimmy Breslin, you brought up Roger Clemens. I know you're at work on a biography of Branch Rickey, Brooklyn Dodgers general manager. You might have heard Clemens this week, there before all of Congress staring upon him, it seemed. What do you make of the Clemens saga here?
I make Congress the loser. What are you worried about? A pitcher who's through just about, and you're going to have hearings to do with his habits with drugs and other stimulants. Who cares?
Does it matter to you, anybody, if we've got growth hormone and steroids running through every pitcher on the mound?
I mean, you've got war running through this country.
Yeah.
We've been years in a place like Iraq. We're a country of 310 million. They had 25 million at the start of this. It's much less. And we're still struggling after the end of, we're in the sixth year. What are you telling me about a pitcher with the Yankees who's through, obviously, What do I care?
Well, let's flip it
and
over
you
then.
You shouldn't care.
Yeah. So your mayor, former mayor, Rudy Giuliani, wanted to be president to go out and do something about war and everything else, I guess. What do you?
Oh, he would have wanted more war. That's why he's where he is.
What is it about? Is it what made him look like the front runner for that time, and then suddenly just fall like a stone? Yeah. Why?
There was nothing there to begin with. Nothing. What you saw at the end is what was there at the beginning, but you didn't see it. That's all.
So what was it about this country that was ready to put a magnifying glass up to him and see him big?
They answered a poll. Don't you think Giuliani would be a good president? Answer yes. They answered the poll. Now you put him out on the street in a campaign, and he comes up empty. So now the poll shows. The poll goes nowhere. He goes nowhere, and it's over.
Done. Poof. Hillary Clinton's your senator. That's it. She wants to be president. What do you think? Would you go there?
She's gone. I'm not going to have to go there. Barack Obama's going to win, isn't he?
Well, they say it's still neck and neck. He's got the momentum. Well, is that your read? Are you so sure? Is that the way you're betting at this track?
I'm betting for two reasons. One, her voice. She's boring. It's tough on the ear, and she has nothing to say. She's incoherent. Listen to her. She has nothing to say. But when
she
they
says
call
a
her
lot.
And she what? And
she
when
says
she has
a lot.
To say
when
she has to say something, she lies. That's all there is to it. She's not going to be there at the end. Don't get so excited about her.
Obama?
Comes along once in how long, huh? When was Kennedy first come around? 53, 54? Jack Kennedy. She's a black Kennedy. He's a black Kennedy, dark Kennedy.
What makes him a Kennedy? What makes him a JFK? Why?
We're going back to one word and one letter again for the politics. E for excitement. He's exciting and everybody else is boring.
Does excitement equal a great president?
Well, you've got to lead. You've got to excite people and get them enthusiastic to sell your programs, what you want to do. They're now saying, Hillary Clinton, that you can't just rely on a voice. The guy's a good speaker. The Britain couldn't rely on Winston Churchill's voice. This guy is a great orator.
Churchill took the country, into war. Do you really think Barack Obama
They were in war before.
Yeah, he pushed for a long time and led in the midst of it. Do you really think, Jimmy Breslin, that Barack Obama will bring this country out of war? Or are we stuck in that situation?
Okay, now, wait a minute. Let's see what it is. When he won the other night, or three in a row, and it began, and he made a speech, if you saw it, that would take care of all questions. Chilling. Now, you're thinking, the rest of the world is looking at the oncoming of Barack Obama. It's got to be great for them. You're looking at somebody who's not going to be an enemy. He's not going to be a Bush who wants you to make more war against them because he doesn't know what else to say or do. It isn't a Hillary Clinton who's following a Bush.
You really think the world is going to be swept away in the Middle East by Barack Obama's charisma and say, fine, let's make peace, Sunni, Shia, it's all over?
I think it's going to be easy to talk, yes. I think it might dissuade somebody from putting a dynamite around them and coming over here to get even for some family that you bombed to death in Baghdad. Maybe you could start talking to people. Maybe they could see that we're not murderous Americans. I think it would be very good for us.
What about your guy there in New York now, Mayor Bloomberg? He's talked a lot about, or there's been a lot of talk about him maybe getting in. Is that all done, or is there still a window for
him? If you had Clinton running against Giuliani, the way it looked for a while, before people began to inspect the products, it would have been a good shot for him. It would have been irresistible to run in between them. He certainly has the money, but not now. You're not going to get any place running against Obama.
What kind of president would he make?
He's good. Bloomberg is very good. He's an accomplished man. He's got the one thing that a lot of people, the good ones, have in their background. He invented something. He invented the stock market business. He's very, very adept man. He's adept at getting through modern life. He's terrific.
Jimmy Breslin, a lot of people want to speak with you. Let's turn to him. We've got the Reverend Aaron Payson on the line from Worcester, Massachusetts. Reverend Payson, you're on with Jimmy Breslin.
Yes, sir. Tom and Jimmy, I've been very interested in this conversation. And one of the questions I have for Mr. Breslin is, and for you, Tom, is in talking about the use of the mob as a background for a novel, and I have not read Jimmy's newest novel. And
A true story, this one. Plenty of novels there, and his Pulitzer on the shelf, but this one's true.
The issue for me is, are we not engaged in mistaking or glorifying or romanticizing violence as a form of entertainment? And I wonder whether or not there's a link between that and the kind of comments that we've heard today about the war in Iraq and so forth. The idea that you step outside the bounds of the law in order to solve something through a violent means.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we perpetuate that kind of thinking as a form of entertainment, can we excuse the government for acting in a similar fashion? In other words,
glorify the mob in the movies, and the next thing you know, you've got war in Iraq, sort of?
Well, no, you've got war in Iraq, but the issue is that, you know, it glorifies a way of handling problems by stepping outside of the boundaries of the law. It glorifies the use of violence as a way of resolving conflict.
Pastor Payson, stick with us. Jimmy Breslin, what do you say?
We're not stepping outside the law with this war. We've made it legal. We've had votes in Congress, which Hillary Clinton voted for, and Obama didn't, which is, to me, is the big difference in their candidacies. We've made it legal. The President of the United States says this war is legal. It's great. We killed Saddam Hussein. We're great. It's a legitimate thing. The mafia, they're out stealing our construction sites. That's illegal. They're bad. Get them. No, there's no connection between the two. You can't condone a war because you have a mafia.
Reverend Payson, is that the end of the lesson, or are you still studying the text here?
I'm not yet convinced, because what I'm really talking about is a mind frame, a state of mind. I'm really talking about the ability to conceive of violence as something as entertainment.
And so the sort of gunslinger state of mind.
Yeah, and that we perpetuate war in other parts of the world. We turn it into entertainment on our news channels. There's to me a similar degree of a lack of an awareness of the use of violence and the romanticization of violence as a way of resolving problems, both on an individual basis and on a larger nationwide basis.
We're going to let that one stand right there. I've got a feeling you're not going to win.
Shakespeare had the stage cluttered with bodies before the first act was over. I mean, it's been ever thus.
Reverend Payson, thanks for calling. Tom, in the Bronx, New York, you're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Yes. Jimmy, do you miss the Irish-American world in Queens, you know, the cops, the bars, the correction officers, and specifically, in terms of criminality, do you think that the Irish-Americans had a better conscience because they took Catholicism more seriously? Go ahead, Jimmy.
Jimmy, what do you say?
What do you mean? You mean Catholicism controlled the honesty of the Irish Americans, of all of the people? I don't think it. No, I don't think so. I don't think there's. No, I don't think that's the.
And what about your Irish American queens? Have you got enough left to go back and step into it, or is that history?
Well, it's still there. It's still there. There's a large strain of Guyanese. There's a large strain of Indian, Pakistan, people from India, Pakistan. The world is changing. And if somebody told me when I was in grammar school in Queens, 118th Street in Ozone Park, St. Benedict Joseph School, you go outside at the end of the day and somebody said that someday in this great America, you're going to have a black running for president. Someday in this great America, you're going to have a woman running for president. So you go home and you tell your people that in the house. I heard in school they're going to a black is going to be president. They want to put you away. You're crazy. Nobody ever heard of such a thing. Do you realize in this country, at this time, you have a black running against a woman for the Democratic nomination that certainly would lead to the presidency?
Does it mean we're over all our humps, we're out of sexism, we're done with racism?
What's
it mean?
I don't know what we're over. We must be over something because the earth just moved.
Shauna in Boston, you're on the air with Jimmy Breslin.
Yeah, hi, Jimmy. I was wondering if you could speak about women in the upper levels of the mafia and some of the things that they did and some of the powerful women.
Are there any? Were there any? I don't know.
Well, I usually hear, you know, on the on the movies, they usually show you the women that were oppressed.
Well,
but
I
know that women are smart, and I know that there must have been some, some upper-level women, and I'd love to hear about them.
Shauna, thanks. Jimmy, were there? Are there?
No, it's all male. They're all in jail together, and they come out, and they all go to dinner together, 12 guys. In fact, so often, so frequently, you see them all together, and no women, you got to say they're gay.
But of course they're not. Though an aside, you've got a great section here on how the mob made kissing the sign. You open the book with yourself in a prologue years and years and years and years ago practicing kissing in the mirror. What were you doing?
I'm doing it so I can fit in with the guys out on the street good. It started on the corner of Metropolitan Avenue and Larimer Street in Brooklyn, with Sonny Vangese, a gangster, and Joey Brancato, a gangster. When they met, for some reason, they kissed. They hugged each other and gave themselves good kisses. Now, I decided if I'm going to go around, let me see what it's like. So I practiced kissing in front of the mirror. But I want to do it just right. I don't want no tongue.
I guess you're not a made man if you go there. Yeah.
No tongue, and no slop when you're kissing. I want to be ready to go into the clubhouse and kiss them on the cheeks the way I'm supposed to. That's the mafia. We kiss hello. We don't shake hands. We kiss.
You said the cops figured out all they had to do was follow the guys who were kissing in the bar.
It's a delight for a federal agent. They don't have to work. They just, whoever kisses, you follow them because they're in.
Jimmy Breslin, I got to ask you about the medium that really made you, newspapers. I mean, way back to 1963, and up you came through those ranks, and the Pulitzer for your commentary there in 1986. And now you look around, and it's everywhere. Even in New York, with your New York Times now, they're talking about cutting back on their staff. Newspapers just seem to be falling to pieces. What do you make of that? And what happens to a city when that happens?
I don't know. We've yet to see what really is going to happen because this is not going to end, this crumbling of papers. Well, how can it end? You've got all these things they're putting out. They call blogs. They act as if blogs are real things. They're expressions of ego from somebody at a kitchen table that fires off his thoughts on something.
Is it so different from a newspaper columnist? Is it so different?
Oh, wait a minute. We do a lot of checking and walking around and trying to get things right. They don't know what right or wrong is on these other things. But out they go, and everyone watches them. Hooray. And the newspapers, to really hasten the slide, are boring. They've lost their energy. They have lead sentences in the New York Times, for example, 51 words in the first sentence of a story.
So where's
nobody's going to read them.
Where's the next Jimmy Breslin growing up right now? Where is that kid, that guy or girl going to cut their teeth?
I have no idea. I know they better be working in a small paper and learn from there and learn not to write 51 words in a lead sentence.
Don't start with 51 words in your lead sentence. There's advice from the master. Jimmy, it's a beautiful...
Who's going to read that much? They're boring.
Not in this day and age. Maybe not. I should say, listeners, you can read an excerpt of Jimmy Breslin's new book, The Good Rat, A True Story, at our website, onpointradio.org. Jimmy, it's beautifully written. I'm amazed at what you put out there.
It
really and truly is.
I'm proud of it.
You still got it going. It's in every line. It's a beautiful thing. We thank you for writing it. We thank you for being with us today. Thanks for coming.
Good.
Jimmy Breslin. Jimmy Breslin. The book is The Good Rat. Listeners, you can read an excerpt at the website and download the On Point podcast there as well, onpointradio.org. We're produced by Julie Jopp, Eileen Mata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Jamie Katsoufis, Noah Hertz-Bunzel, Ping Huang, and Chelsea Mayers. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.